Having trouble accessing the intranet and a challenge.
Yeah.
Okay, did everyone download the file su3.notebook from the internet? Yes? So let's run the header with this clear all, or with the kernel, and open the section Gell-Mann matrices. Okay. Okay, so can I assume that everyone downloaded the document and has it open right now? Yes? Okay, good. So what are the, how would you study the SU3 representation? How would you start studying some representation of SU3 and say the adjoint or the fundamental, whatever? So how did we do it in SU2? What we did was, we looked for matrices for the generators, and then we saw that those generators were the Pauli matrices. So how did we arrive at the Pauli matrices? We were looking for 2x2 matrices, which were Hermitian and traceless, right? And the Pauli matrices is a basis of such matrices. Okay, so it's a basis. The Pauli matrices are a basis of Hermitian 2x2 traceless matrices. Now suppose you want to go to SU3. What would be a nice basis of matrices which are Hermitian and traceless in SU3? Well, the first thing we can do is to embed the Pauli matrices inside 3x3 matrices. For sure, those will be some Hermitian traceless matrices. So the first three matrices here are exactly that. This is the Pauli matrix sigma 1 embedded in this corner here. This is the Pauli matrix sigma 2 embedded in this corner here. And this is the Pauli matrix sigma 3 or sigma z embedded in this corner here, inserted in this corner here. So of course these matrices are traceless and Hermitian. right? The zero, the fact that you have some zeros doesn't change anything. Other emission matrices are obtained by not putting the 1, 1 here, but by putting it here and here, for example, and that's lambda 4. And lambda 5 is similar to the second Pauli matrix, but with I and minus I here. Sigma 6 is similar again to the Pauli matrix sigma 1 with the 1s there, and sigma 7 similar to sigma y. So this will be just a natural basis that we will immediately guess, at least up to lambda 7, just by the most obvious generalization of the Pauli matrices. The last one is the remaining matrix that we need to describe Hermitian traceless matrices. I could choose, for example, another matrix. This is an example of a matrix which is conventionally used, which is traceless and Hermitian, of course. Okay? So this is the basis of traceless Hermitian matrices that I can use as generators of the SU3 algebra. Absolutely, I would have to check that the number of generators for SU3 is 8. No, you can see how many parameters parameterize Hermitian traceless matrices. It's 8, because if you have an Hermitian matrix, right, on the diagonal, you must have real elements, because the matrix is Hermitian. So you have n real parameters. Of the diagonal, you can go in one of the triangles, it's completely general and complex, because then it's the reflection of that on the other triangle, right? And then you have to subtract to that 1, because it's traceless. And if you do this counting, you get 8 for SU3. Did everyone follow the counting of parameters? You have to count Hermitian matrices of size 3 by 3. So the matrix is Hermitian, it means that the transpose and conjugation gives the same thing. So along the diagonal, I must have real elements, right? So I have 3 elements there. Then on the upper triangle, I can have anything, right? So I have 3 entries there. 3 times 2 gives 6. Because then on the lower triangle, I just conjugate, and I put there just a conjugate. So I have 9 so far, right? 3 plus 6, but it's traceless, so I must subtract 1, so I get 8. That's the condition that the group is as determinant 1. For the algebra, it's the trace being equal to 0. Right? So trace being 0 subtracts 1, that gives 8. Hermitian Hermitian would give 9. You can have. Yes. In SU3, this would be a basis of operators. If there would be degeneracies, we would see it at the level of the algebra. Right? If it would factorize, if the algebra would factorize, we would see it explicitly. But we don't need to think about it. Right, you just parameterize the generators. Okay, did everyone follow the counting of 8 parameters, right? 3 on the diagonal, 6 on the upper triangle, the other one is reflected, minus 1 because it's traceless. So 3 plus 6 minus 1 is 8. Okay? So you can think about how would it be for SU4, and how many matrices would you have for SU4, and for SUN in general, it's easy to see. You have n on the diagonal, something like n minus 1 over 2 or something like this on the upper triangle. We have to think for 2 seconds. Minus 1. Right? And this gives the number of parameters. Is it clear? Okay. Now, I could multiply this matrix by 2, this lambda 7 by 2, and I would still have an Hermitian traceless matrix. Right? So why did I decide to put 1 here and not a 2 here, a pi here, and whatever? Well, because I'm choosing some normalization. And what's the normalization that I'm choosing is the canonical one. So let's see what normalization I decide to choose for the generators. Let's open the next section. Okay. And I decided to choose the normalization. So in the same way, the spin Please run the previous section. We can just click here and run it. Now, the spin I define as being one half of the generator, and they are normalized in this canonical normalization. Trace of JA, JB is one half of delta AB. This is the standard textbook normalization of Lie algebras. This is the what you normally choose. It's a convention if you want. Okay? This is some normalization. It's like being orthonormal. Okay? And here, what are we doing? We are checking. How are we checking? Exactly as we saw in the previous lecture today. We make a table of trace of JA dot JB. We equate it to Kronecker delta of AB. We do this for any A and B. Then we flatten, and then we replace the head by end, and we get a true statement. Please tell me if I'm going too fast, okay? Let's check something, just not to be... Let's, for example, check. Of course, we know it must work, but let's compute some element of SU3 by exponentiating these generators. So let's do it. So let's compute, for example, the matrix exponential. This is the exponential of a matrix. It's defined by matrix plus matrix square over 2 plus matrix cube over 3 factorial, etc. And let's exponentiate I times sum from j equal 1 up to 8, the 8 possible generators. Okay. Then we have some angle. Let's put some random angle. Random. Okay, if you run random here, you see that random just gives some random number. You can run it twice, gives two different random numbers. Times jj. So this is some example. I exponentiate with some random angles and the generators that I introduced above. Let's call this example EX and let's run it. And this is what we get. Okay, so we created some random SU3 matrix by exponentiating some random angles. We can run again and we get a different matrix. So each one of us got a different matrix, right? You have matrix X.
Yeah.
Did you write like this with capital E?
Yeah.
And then inside, do you have exactly the same thing? Did you run the previous cells? Okay. Now there it's. Normally, this is not the way we like to see matrices in this list form. So let's not see this output. And let's instead ask for the matrix form of this example, where it looks a bit better. It looks more like a matrix. Okay? Let's compute the determinant of this matrix. And we get, indeed, 1. Right? Up to just some numerical error. And the numerical error we know how to do. Let's do it in a nicer way. We have this determinant. Now this is numerical error. We chop to get rid of this garbage. Now it's 1. And if we want to get rid of this dot here, we want to say approximate the result by a rational number if it really looks like a rational number, which is rationalized. And now it gives 1. Okay? And you see that this notation is extremely useful. Otherwise, the number of brackets here would be quite huge. So we pick the matrix, we compute the determinant, we get rid of 10 to the minus 17, and then when we get 1 point, we tell her to rationalize to get rid of the dot and to just give me 1. So the determinant is 1. This is because we chose traceless matrices. We can now check that the matrix times, now let's put inside the bracket, the Hermitian conjugate, which we write example and then escape, Hermitian conjugate, escape, HC, escape. This gives the Hermitian conjugate, and then we close the brackets. And it gives this crap. Again, this is just garbage, so let's do exactly the same thing. Chop it and then rationalize it. We chop, we rationalize.
Do you think
H is escape, HC escape from remission conjugate. Escape, HC escape.
So you can't just put an H in the exponent?
No. This is the analog of dagger. It's and we can apply matrix form to this final result to see it as a nice identity. So the matrix times the remission conjugate is just 1. Okay, so here is a random matrix. Its determinant is 1. The matrix times the remission conjugate is the identity. Okay? Now, obviously, the fundamental representation, which was the representation that we just defined by writing a basis of remission matrices, traceless matrices, is three-dimensional. The defining representation of SU3 is three-dimensional. If it was SU4, it would be four-dimensional. Okay? Good. Let's close this section and open the next one, where we compute the structure constants. So we have here I wrote, we have JA with JB gives I, FABC, JC. This was the definition of structure constants. And these generators we checked before are normalized to trace of JA, JB equal 1/2 of delta AB. Okay? So, if I multiply this expression by the generator and take the trace, I collapse this JC and I get this last equation in the text. Is this last equation in the text clear for everyone? That this is a way of getting the generator, just multiply by the generator and take the trace. Okay? So this is what we want to compute. Okay. So here is what FABC is. FABC, okay, I did here something a bit funny. You might find this a bit strange. I define F of A, B, and C is equal to, and then I wrote again, F of A, B, and C is equal to this. Sorry? Because I multiply the left-hand side by some j. So I have JA, JB times JD, okay? Or let's call it times JC, and let's use the letter D on the other side, times JC is equal to F, A, B, D, JD, JC.
With an I.
Right? Now take the trace of both sides. I get trace of this is equal to I F A B D, and then this is normal, is 1/2 delta D C. So this is nothing but I over 2 F A B C. Okay. Let's understand why did I do it in this way. This was just to gain like 7 seconds, but let me explain, when do we do something like this? Let me see what's the best example. So if I have, for example, let's see what happened. Let me try to come up with an example. I'm not sure if this will work in an easy way. Let's say that we are solving some recursion relation. G of 0 equal to 1. And then G of n is equal to sum of the previous G's, for example, of G of k from 0 up to n minus 1. We say k here. It's sum of k like this. So this defines a function. I tell you what it is at its value. So if I run g of 1, it's given by 0. If I run g of 2, okay, with this definition, I think it will always be 0. So I need to put here k plus 1, for example. So this defines a recursion. I can convert this to a nice format. G of 2 gives 3. And if I ask what is g of 200, It takes quite a while. I'm not sure if it will even give something in a useful time. Okay? It's not computing. Let's try some smaller g. G of 20. Okay, this took a while, but it managed to finish. G of 50. Wow, this will never. G of 50. G of 50 already takes a long time. But now, let's put the g of n here. Let's abort. Let's put the g of n here, and let's try again. You see? Immediate. It was instantaneous. I can put now 200, the one which was not working, it's instantaneous. Okay? So it's like black magic. What was working? What was going on here? Can someone tell me? Why does it work once I do what I did there? It is there is a nice logic. I mean, I think.
Because now it doesn't capture the terms n
factorial. Absolutely. So before. So first of all, why do we need this delay here? Why do we need the delay? Because we need to tell what's n, right? Otherwise, this expression doesn't make sense. She doesn't know how to sum if I don't tell her what is n. So I need to delay. So now what does it mean when I put this delay? It means, okay, I should give her 7, for example. Now, once I give her 7, she will compute what is to the right of this. So now she knows n is equal to 7. And okay, let's evaluate this. And now, when she evaluates this, she does g of 7 equal to this with 7. And now she defines what is g of 7. So next time she would run g of 8, she already knows what is g of 7, so she doesn't need to compute it again. So she's memorizing the values. Okay, in other words, let's see it in more detail. Let's make clear all of G, and let's remove this. Okay, and now let's run G of 20, the one which takes a while. And now let's ask, what is G? And Mathematica knows G of 0 is 1, and G of N is this. As we said before, she always gives us the most specific, which is g of 0, and then the most general, which is g of n. Now let's copy it again with our trick. Let's clear, run g of 20, and then ask what is g. So let's copy all this stuff down here, and now let's put our trick. G of n equal. Let's ask again what is g of 20, and now let's ask what is g. And notice what happens. When she runs g of 3, what she does is she defines g of 3, and now she knows that g of 3 is 12. When she asks for g of 4, she defines what is g of 4. So she's saving all these values so that she doesn't need to compute it and the complexity doesn't grow exponential. Okay? So this is what happens. So if you ask g of 200, she's saving the 200 previous values, and that's why it's extremely fast. Okay? Okay, you wrote, you kept the example, I will erase it. And so this would be the way to, if you would like to solve this equation. Now g of 100 is trivial, otherwise it would not work. Okay, so this would be a side remark. Okay. Here what I did was exactly the same. I don't want to be computing always this product and this trace over and over again. I want to compute it once, what is f, but then once I compute it, I want her to know and not to compute this, to multiply and compute the trace again. Okay? Just to make it a bit faster. I think at the end, where we will want to check many relations, I think this would gain us a couple of seconds, but it was a good excuse to introduce this trick of memorizing values, which is extremely powerful. Okay, so this is f. FAB is 2 over I trace of the commutator dotted with JC. And now, let's copy this table and try to understand what it is. This is the non-zero structure constants. So, Let's erase this first part, this part, and let's just put f of a, b, and c. So let's see what am I doing here. I'm saying that make a table of a, b, c, where a, b, c run, let's put some enter, run from a up to 8, b up to 8, and c up to 8. What are we compute? What will the output be? If the structure constant is non-zero, write f of abc equal to the result of the structure constant. Otherwise, put an empty space. And then at the end, we flatten to get rid of the empty spaces. So let's run without flatten. This is what it gives. So there are many empty spaces, and then some structure constants, f786 is equal to this, etc. Okay? And then when we make flatten, we remove all these brackets and we just kill these empty spaces. Okay? Just copy paste what I wrote and edit it a bit. Don't write everything again, of course. This is basically what is in the file. Okay? So is this clear what this does? Or not? Is this clear? Yes? So we make a table, we put an empty space if the structure constant is zero, because we don't want to get f equals zero, f equals zero, f equals zero for 200 values. We just want the interesting ones, of course. And when it is non-zero, we write f equal to this, to have something we can identify. Okay? What I wrote, is it clear? What I wrote here is exactly the same thing, but instead of f, a, b, c, I wrote something a bit more fancy, which is this nicer notation, where I have a, b, and c. So please look here. I have a, b, and c. Each of them is converted to a string, to look like a string. It's the string a, string b, and string c. It's a character, it's not a variable, it's a character. And then I join these strings. And now this 147 is a string, is a word, 147. Otherwise, if I would put here ABC, she would multiply, and she would get 1 times 4 times 7, and she would give me something. So this is just some commands to get these strings here, and instead of this ugly S. But in practice, it's just the same as this. Okay? Is it okay?
What does the slash do
to string? This slash here?
Yeah.
Let's see. So the slash means you apply to each of the elements.
Oh, yeah.
So you have F applied to A, B, and C. It's thread. You get F of A, F of B, F of C. If it would be F applied to, it would give F of the list. Right, so each of them is converted to a string. So what we are doing is two string. It looks like it's the same. It looks like it didn't do anything. But if you ask yourself what's the full form of this, this is a list of string A, string B, and string C. While if you would ask what was it before, it was a list of A, B, and C. Now strings, which are characters, can be joined. So now I can string join this string, I can string join this string, and this joins A, B, and C into A, B, C. Okay? So what I did was I used this to have some nice notation with F in underscore A, B, C. Okay? Okay, next, we can notice, actually, that these Fs, many of them are the same. For example, this one and this one, they differ by exchanging 6 and 7, and here 7 and 6. And the only difference is a minus sign. Okay? So we can indeed see that indeed, due to these two properties, due to this definition of f, due to the fact that f is given by this, f is antisymmetric in all its indices. So if you know f123, you know f132. It's just playing with cyclicity of the trace and antisymmetry of the commutator. So we don't need, so we only need to consider the index where A is smaller than B, smaller than C. So the really nice version is when we only compute this table, A up to 8, B starting at A plus 1 up to 8, and C starting at B plus 1 up to 8. And this contains all the information that we need to know. The other ones are just obtained by exchanging. So if I exchange 8 and 7, I get a minus sign here. So this contains all the information. Okay. So this is... Okay, so this is the really nice version. Okay? So these are the structure constants of SU3. They are not as simple as epsilon ijk, like for SU2. You see, there are some square root of 2 over 3, there is some 1/2. These are the structure constants of SU3. They tell you what is the group multiplication close to the origin. Okay. Not as trivial as the other ones, but still pretty simple. Okay? Can I move on? So okay, I will give you the file. You don't need to write everything. Now, we can close this section again. Everything is closed, and we can open. Notice that here, in clear all, as we are running the file, these variables are becoming black because they are defined. This J adjoint is not yet. It appears in this section now. So let's open the adjoint. So what are the generators of the adjoint? The generators of the adjoint, the definition, was that the components I and J of the adjoint generator number A were just given by the structure constants in this way, minus I, F, A, I, J. Okay? So that's what we do. If you give me J adjoint of A, and again I'm using this trick for memorizing, the J adjoint is just the table of minus I, F, A, I, J, where A and J run from 1 to 8. Okay? Let's jump this next line and go here. For example, this is matrix form applied to J adjoint 1, the first generator of the adjoint. This is how it looks like. You can now change it to some other one. The last one, for example. This is how the last one looks like. And you can play a bit and see this is how the fifth one looks like. Okay? Now, this is an eight-dimensional representation. You see, this matrix have eight dimensions. It's always like this. The adjoint, the dimension of the adjoint, by definition, is the number of generators, as we said. It's the number of independent real parameters that parameterize the group. So the adjoint is eight dimension. Okay? There are eight generators. The adjoint is eight-dimensional. It's an irreducible representation of SU3, but which is bigger. It's eight-dimensional. So both the fundamental and the adjoint are irreducible representations. The adjoint, as I wrote here, the adjoint is eight-dimensional because always the dimension of the adjoint is the number of generators, which is 8 for SU3. And both the adjoint and the fundamental are irreducible. They are IREPs. They always are. Okay? And here, in this line, we check the algebra. So what do? We check that the commutator is given by the structure constants. We know that this is true by the Jacobi identity, and we are just doing what we did in the previous lecture. Applying something, flatten it, and then replacing the head by end. And this gives true. Okay? Okay, and that's it. And I just added an obvious comment here that we are made of quarks and gluons transform in representations of SU3, so It's hard to imagine something more important than SU3. But it's just too obvious to mention it. Okay. Good. So, okay, we have plenty of time. Questions about SU3. So you saw explicitly it's not easy to construct representations of SU3. Okay. Is there any question about some command in Mathematica which was a bit fast or a bit unclear in what we did?
When you're defining the joint representation, when you're building the matrices, why do we define the function in that way?
The function what?
The J function.
This J? To memorize it, because here when I make this table, I run some A, and I check it, right? And then I let's do an exercise. Let's do the following exercise. Let's apply timing at the end of this expression to see how long does it take to compute this, okay? And let's run it. It takes 0.04 seconds, okay? And now, let's go to the previous definitions and remove these memorization tricks. So let's comment this. And let's remove the memorization tricks. Okay. Let's go to the structure constant section where we define the structure constants. And let's remove them. Let's first comment. And then we remove the memorization trick. Let's quit the kernel, otherwise the values are memorized. It doesn't work. We quit kernel. Let's close this section. Let's select the previous sections and run them. We select. We can select with the mouse the previous ones and just run. Now we can define the J adjoint and we can see how long does it take. And you see, it takes a bit longer. It will take maybe 7 seconds or 8 seconds. 5 seconds. Okay. So this was the purpose of this memorization stuff that we did. We can now try to not memorize the Fs, but memorize the Js. Then it will be much faster, but it will be 2 seconds or something. You can play and see. Maybe one of the memorizations is useless, but the other one is good. Okay. Okay, good. So let's maybe, I think today we'll finish a bit earlier, but before, let's do a brute force exercise of something that we know how to do in a smart way. Let's check how many singlets and triplets we have in this product of 4 spins that was in one of the problems. Okay? So let's start a new file. And let's put some nice style sheets, creative, natural color. And the goal is total spin for a system of m spins. M spins 1/2. Okay. Okay, good. So now, what we want is to compute the addition of 2 spins and seeing what's the total angular momenta. So first, let's see how we will do for 1 single spin. 1 single spin, we will write Pauli matrix 1, square, or Pauli matrix 1 dot Pauli matrix 1, sorry. Plus Pauli matrix 2 dot Pauli matrix 2 plus Pauli matrix 3 dot Pauli matrix 3. And because the spin is 1/2 of Pauli matrix, we'll put 1/4 here. And this would be our total spin matrix, our J square. And J square is just a boring diagonal matrix with 3/4 and 3/4. And of course, we can put here in text, 3/4 is nothing but 1/2 times 1/2 plus 1. Okay, so not something extremely exciting. But let's do it still in a slightly more interesting notation. Let's define sigma, scape S scape, to be Pauli matrix. Okay? And let's compute the sum. Okay? Let's do it in a proper notation. From J equal to 1 up to 3 of sigma I dot sigma I. Okay? Sigma J dot sigma J, sorry. Now, with 1/4 outside. Okay? So this is just the total spin for one spin 1/2. Okay? So now, suppose I want to consider, so this, we can call this section, we can create a subsection and call it one spin. Now we can do two spins. Okay? For two spins, what do we need? We need, let's write in text. I will again give you the file, don't worry copying everything. But we need sigma 1 tensor product with the identity of the second side plus the identity dot sigma, tensor product sigma 1. If you want to enter tensor product, it's star scape C star scape. Scape C star and then scape again. If you put the scapes together, this gives this. So we need this to have the spin. This is the spin X component. Right? And we need to do it for all components and sum the squares of this again. So how do we do it? Let's introduce some notation. Let's introduce slash DSI scape. This gives this nice I. Let me increase the zoom, sorry. Scape, this was scape, DS, I, scape. And I'm also going to use scape, no, this is it. Scape I of N, let's define it to be the identity matrix with 2 to the N elements. Okay? So let's define I, n to be the identity matrix with 2 to the n elements. Then what we want to do is sigma 1. What we would like to do is sigma 1 tensor product with identity matrix plus identity matrix tensor product with sigma 1. Now, do you know another name for the tensor product? Maybe you learned it in that's not the one Mathematica uses. No. Sorry? No. That's not the one she uses. Kronecker product. I don't know if you learned it in when studying how is it called? Elasticity. That's how people in elasticity call it. So let's say that, okay, but before that, so let's see. So we can use Kronecker product. Let's do Kronecker product, which is tensor product, of sigma 1 with slash DSI 1. And then let's apply matrix form at the end to see how it looks like. So this is okay. This is indeed the tensor product of sigma 1 with the identity. Right? Does everyone agree that this is the tensor product of sigma 1 with the identity? Sigma 1 is 1, 1, and instead of 1, I put the identity. Yes?
How do you create this I?
It's here. Scape, DSI, scape.
Is there any way of selecting the character and then is there a command where you can expand it back out into its escape? Whatever the command you use, escape.
To, if you want to know what this is,
yeah.
You want to select this and undo this. Not sure. Let's see. No, I don't know. I would have to think. I don't know how to do it. This capital I escape, DSI escape. Okay, so this would be this Kronecker product. This will tell us the X component, right? And what we want is not this. We want this plus the other one, where it acts on sites on the other side. Okay. This would be the sigma X component of the big system. It's now a bigger matrix, you see? And this, even before we start to continue, this is already a bit awful. Just to make this simple thing, we get this awful notation. So let's try something before continuing. Let's write A, scape C star scape B. We would like this to be our Kronecker product. We would like this to be doing what that stuff is doing, right? This is the human notation, right? A tensor product B, not this awful Kronecker product. So let's teach Mathematica to use this notation. So to do it, let's ask Mathematica, how does she see this expression? Let's apply, for example, tree form or full form, whatever you like more. And you see that Mathematica sees that as circle times applied to A and B. Okay? So it's simple. We just need to tell her that circle times is equal to Kronecker products. And then, when we will write this, it will be Kronecker product of A and B. So we just say that circle times is equal to Kronecker product. That's it. Sorry, notation for tensor product is scape, C, star, and scape. And now let's copy this expression here that we had, which was a bit awful, and write it in this nice notation. So now we write sigma 1 scape C star scape plus identity scape C star scape on sigma 1. Yes? Sorry, let me understand.
Where you wrote circle times equals Kronecker product.
Yes?
Is it possible to put the symbol equals Kronecker product?
I don't think so. Because if you would write just C star and try to run it, you would be confused. It's a function, right? It's like writing sine. And you just. Okay, no. In this case, it would be okay. But no, if you ask what is full form of this, she gets confused. She doesn't. You have to tell Kronecker. Must be something, A and B. Then she knows what it is. Yeah. It's important to know that this circle is called circle times. Yeah. That's why it was important to do this tree form. Or, again, we could just do full form. It's even faster. We just see that. Okay, now I already ran this one, and it already appears, you see, Kronecker product here. So now, when I run this, now I get exactly the same output, but in a nice way. And this is the addition of two spins, the sigma x component of the addition of two spins. Now I need to consider component x, y, and z, and sum the squares of them. Let's compute the square of this one first. How would you compute the square of this one? Am I going too fast? Okay, so where is everyone? Here? If I'm going too fast, let me know. Just tell me. Wait. So So these are the two notations that we are using now. Scape DSI and scape C star scape. This is the identity matrix, 2 to the n, which is a matrix of size 2 to the n. This is the tensor product. Sigma x with identity plus identity with sigma x. This tells Mathematica that we can use circle times instead of Kronecker product, and therefore we can now use this notation instead of this one here. Okay? Does everyone have this last line working? Sigma 1 dot identity, etc. Yeah? So now let's compute the square of this. So we want to compute sigma x squared, sigma z squared, sigma y squared. So let's square this one. So we can write this one, and we select dot itself. This is sigma x squared. Here is what sigma x squared looks like. Okay? And now I could sum, I could replace 1 by I and sum over I. This would be it. Right? But instead of doing it in this way, to make it, I think, easier to read, let's tell that what we want to do is pick this guy and square it. So what is the operation for square? Is the function, we divide by 2 because we want a spin, dot, we divide by 2, this is the function, apply it to this. Okay? This will pick this stuff here, we'll pick this selected stuff, and it will compute the dot between half of it with half of it, which is exactly what we want. This gives the matrix that we want. Okay? Yes? This dot is matrix multiplication. It's dot. Just special dot. It's just matrix multiplication. What do we now want to do? We want to sum over j equal 1 up to 3, and instead of 1, we want to put j. And this gives us the total angular momentum. Here it is. And now, we want to pick this and compute its eigenvalues. And here are the eigenvalues of the total momentum. Okay? So we have two momenta, and we add spin 1, so that jj plus 1 gives 2, and spin 0, so that I get 0. Okay? So let's copy everything that we need for this expression to run and put it everything together so that we see that it's really simple. So we needed circle times equal Kronecker product. We needed to tell that sigma was the Pauli matrix. And we needed to tell that this I was the identity matrix. So this is everything we need to run this line. So we just need this, and then this would work. Okay? So, yeah, this is it. So does everyone have these four lines working? And are those clear for everyone, what they are doing? Yeah. Now, what would you do to do four spins instead of two spins? Absolutely. Just do it four times. So let's do four spins. We can have spin acting on the first side and then three spins to the right of it. So we put identity 3. You see this 3 now means three spins to the right of it because it's an identity of dimension 2 to the 3. Or we can have one spin and then acting on sigma j, and then we can have two spins to the right of it. And then we have two more terms, where we have two spins to the left and one spin to the right, or three spins to the right and nothing to the left. And here are the eigenvalues. Okay? So three to the right, one to the left, and two to the right, two to the left, one to the right, or three to the left. Can we make this nicer? Sorry? No, I don't mean analytically. I mean at the level of Mathematica. Analytically, this is the best you can do. They are acting on independent sites. So there is nothing you can do. What you can do is sum over the position where this pin J is. So let's do it a bit better. So notice that what is identity 0? Just the element 1. So I can always say that I have here 0, here. And here I have 0 spins to the right. This doesn't change the result, it's exactly the same. I'm just entering with the matrix 1, doesn't do anything. So now it's clear I have 0, 3, 1, 2, 2, 1, 3, 0. It's clear that this is a sum. Right? So let's write it as a sum. So we write, instead of this, we write sum from n. Oops. Sum from n equals 0 up to 3 n 3 minus n. Okay? This is exactly the same as what we had here. And we run, and here are the eigenvalues. Okay, I'm just saying I'm summing over the position J, and I'm summing over the position n, sorry, I have n spins before this guy, and I have 3 minus n spins after it. In total, there are 4 spins. This is exactly the same as that, just written it as a sum in a nicer way. Okay? And now we can define this function. We can replace 3 by m and call this function eigenvalues for spin m, for n spins. We put an equal, we delay, and this 3 here becomes an m, and this 3 here becomes an m. And now what I do is I compute the eigenvalues for 4 spins. Oops. What happens? Ah. If I put m, 4 spins, here I should put m minus 1. Right? Before we had 4 spins, and here it was 3. So the eigenvalues for 4 spins are this one. Okay? How many singlets are there? How many states do we see with zeros, with spin zero? Two. These two zeros. So let's count. We should not trust ourselves if we have Mathematica. So let's count how many zeros there are. Let's count in eigenvalue 4 how many zeros there are. There are two. Okay? And now we can do the following. We can put this in a vector and say, we can put a string, say, number of singlets is No, number of singles is 2. And to remove, to make it this output look nicer, I would apply table form at the end, and then I would get just number of singlets is 2. Okay? Let's create a table of such statements. Let's add the other one where we count triplets. Yes? So right now we have number of singlets, number of singlets. Now I want to do the triplets one. Yes? Now, what's the number of triplets? Number of triplets, I should count how many times I find 2, right? Because for a triplet, we have spin 1, right? So JJ plus 1 is 2. But we have to divide by 3 because each triplet has 3 states. So we count how many states there are, how many states, and we divide by 3 because the triplet has dimension 3. So we see that there are 2 singlets and 3 triplets. And again, let me copy everything that we need, Let me put everything that we need together. The only thing we need for to run this code for any number of spins is exactly what is in the screen, nothing else. We just need to define what is the Pauli matrix, what's the identity matrix, Kronecker product. The first definitions are just to make the notation look nicer in what follows. They are nothing special. I didn't know, of course, I could just define them everything in this line, but it would be extremely awful. And then this is a more or less nice way of implementing this. Okay. And I could now change the number of spins, and instead of 4, have 5 spins, and this would be the results for the total angular momentum for 5 spins. And 6 as well. Yeah. Okay, so this is how you could do something in a brute force way. Of course, we know how to do it in much faster using these boxes, but in other situations you might want to use them. So is this notation clear? You see, here you have an example. Okay, not that many, but where a few of these funny syntaxes are used. We are defining the function on the go. We need a function, we define it. We don't need to define it elsewhere. We just define it, use it immediately. Right? We define and apply it. We apply here again. We have some sums. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Any question here? I think we will. I would probably stop here now. Sorry?
Mine works for 4 and then go over to 5.
No, it works for 5.
Why does yours work? Mine works for 4.
It's a good friend that you have minus 1.
Do you have here n minus 1? Did you put n minus 1 in the two places where there was 3 before? Both here and here?
Why are we counting 2 to find the number of triplets?
Why are we counting 2? Because the triplet is spin 1. For spin 1, jj plus 1 is 2. For j equal 1, j times j plus 1 is 2. Right? Yeah, the angular momentum, the eigenvalues give JJ plus 1. Right? So, for example, this 3 quarter is 1 half. Right? It's a singlet. It's the doublet. The doublet. So, if I want to count doublets, I would count 3 quarters. And then divide by 2. So, here there would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So, there are 5 doublets. Right? There are 10 3 quarters. Yes?
Whoever Two thirds in slots. I said, okay. Go for it.
There it's not. You see, you are computing. The eigenvalue.
There's a tutorial this afternoon before tea. Dennis will
get
the tutorial will start at 1:30. So you're encouraged to go a little bit earlier to arrive by 12:30 for lunch in the bistro.
The mine is probably against some.
So the lunch starts at 12:30 and you're supposed to be back exactly at 1:30.
Thank you.
Pedro.
So I actually
Okay.